You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Our Creatures Podcast. This is Chris.
And I'm Angie.
And this is the Mekong giant catfish episode. So excited about this one.
Yes, Chris, we are talking today about the largest freshwater fish in the world. Most people are familiar with the catfish family, so we're going to be talking a lot about catfish in general, but Chris and I really wanted to focus on the Mekong giant catfish, not only because it's the largest freshwater fish, but it's also critically endangered. And the Mekong giant catfish has had a dramatic decrease in their population. Researchers estimate over 90% of a population lost in the past 30 years. So in my lifetime, Chris's lifetime. So it's a really fascinating story that we want to tell. And I was really inspired. A few weeks ago, I got a chance to sit down with Dr. Zeb Hogan, who is a research biologist and host of the National Geographic TV series Monster Fish. And he recently wrote a book. And so we were talking about the book and the TV series and these fish and mega fish in general. And Chris and I are not ichthyologists. We are not fish biologists. We focus normally on mammals, and that's where our expertise came in, more with things with hooves and horns. And throughout the many years of doing this podcast, we've learned a ton about bird biology and reptiles, and fish is really always eye-opening. But to sit down with Zeb and hear his stories and just learn about what a conservation hero he is and what people are trying to do across the world to save these mega fish was just really, really, really inspiring for me. So I was pumped to prep this podcast this week. And I know Chris was, because he sent me a message last night that he had like 50 slides or something. So, I mean, it is a mega fish, right? A giant catfish needs like a giant amount of slides to just discuss how cool they are, right?
They are. I had to stop. I had to stop myself. I'm like, okay, that is enough. I probably will not get to all the information I want to give in this podcast because a lot of reasons. First, I think the theme over the next few weeks of the All Creatures Podcast is we're going to be looking at giants. And Angie had an incredible interview. I'm jealous I didn't get to sit in on it. But talking about these massive freshwater fish, I've got others in a list here in a second I'm going to talk about. Now, just as a reminder, the whale shark is the largest fish in the world. Oceanic, 40 feet, nearly 20 tons. Angie, you probably wouldn't even remember last time when we covered them. Episode.
Ooh, let me just take a wild guess. 77.
Lower. It's episode 23.
Oh, wow. That Price the Right rules. I was way, way off. But yeah.
Yeah. So over 300 episodes ago is when we covered them. And the largest freshwater fish is just such an interesting story. So that's why so many slides, because catfish are so amazing and a fish that I love near and dear to my heart as a kid growing up fishing for them, releasing now. I wouldn't eat them now unless I really needed it for my dinner. But anyways, wonderful fish. On top of Angie's interview, I just finished an amazing interview, and I wish Angie could have sat in on it. Because lately we're really getting hammered with people wanting to come on the podcast, and we really are getting some amazing pitches. And I was very fortunate to interview the producers of Apple TV Plus's Big Beasts. So not only do we have Megafish with Zeb Hogan, Dr. Zeb Hogan, now we have Apple TV Plus's Big Beasts that's narrated by Tom Hiddleston. So Loki, one of my favorite actors of late. And almost got him on the podcast, but he was pretty busy. But even more, I think this was more exciting for me, is I got to interview the producers, Tom Hugh Jones and Bill Markham. And that's because producers are, people don't understand what they do. These are the originator of these ideas. They are the ones that secure the funding to go out and shoot these documentaries or even any TV show or movie or whatever. So the producers are the ones that come up with the ideas, pitch it, get the funding. Then they go and get the directors, the cast, the people that do the voiceovers in these, and they help make and produce the series. So I had a million questions for them because Big Beast is...
Fanboy alert, fanboy.
Oh, I had such a great talk with them.
Yeah.
And, oh, it was. And Big Beast, I got to preview it, Apple TV Plus, and it was
amazing.
That's
when
series.
I feel like I hit the big time. When they start sending us like previews where I'm like, John, you can't watch this. It's just for me right now. Just kidding.
It's true. And if you have my names bouncing around the screen so you're not pirating it, it's like, oh my gosh.
Such a nerd, but it's so fun. Obviously, this is a passion project that has grown and grown. And it's so funny when I sit down in these interviews sometimes, it becomes very clear and obvious as they like open up their Zoom link. I'm like, yeah, so I'm not really like a professional journalist or an interviewer. And my dog's barking in the background and I'm screwing up all the time. And so, but maybe that's why they love us, right?
Yeah, you even had Maddox. Yeah, I remember when
wild when I'm doing these interviews. But it is fun. And it's, and as you mentioned, talking to some of these producers and big wigs, I mean, my goodness, it's really exciting. So hopefully, please check out these interviews that are going to be released in the next week. And then there's also some really fun interviews from a few weeks ago that released.
So a couple weeks ago, episode 330, Path of the Panther with Carlton Ward.
Yes, so. Carlton. Oh my gosh. I was talking about fangirling. I mean, this just, I had no idea what a conservation rock star he was until he told his story. And it was just very genuine and organic about his growth as not only a photographer, but also a National Geographic explorer and a conservation hero, like helping to save the Florida panther and helping create critical habitats for them to be able to move up and down the coast of Florida. We're still working on that, but when people say, oh, one individual can't make a difference. Nope, that's wrong. An individual can make a huge difference. And Carlton was a great example of that. So one of my favorite interviews I've done recently, very, very inspiring. So check that out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I was working with high school students last Friday that came to visit the uni here. And talking about conservation and how people make a difference. And I always use Dr. Rebecca Cliff, who founded the Sloth Conservation Foundation in Costa Rica. I mean, people are making it. And then the week before that, we had little fanboying, fangirl moments with Bob Poole, Secrets of
that
the Elephants.
That was a big one for me, too. I was some of my buddies from college are into filming and directing and then cinematography and then scoring music. I was like, look who I'm interviewing.
it was fun. It's been a fun few weeks. Very busy for Angie and I. So that was episode 329, Secrets of the Elephants. That's out on Disney Plus and Nat Geo. So again, all of these Path of the Panther movie, Secrets of the Elephants, and then just to bring back to the Big Beast, Tom and Bill were just amazing, fun to talk to, so knowledgeable. Tom had worked on, he was a producer for Planet Earth 1 and Planet Earth 2. Like, I just was like, you produced these? Like, that's when everything changed for me. And I talk about it with him. I do ask him about the Saiga because we talk about it a lot in this podcast and about how important that is, that what we learned from it. But they also of them worked on Night on Earth, which I know is on Netflix for me. Animal, which is on Netflix for me. Tiny World, Human Planet. So these were just amazing people to talk to and give some insight into filmmaking, how they make these films, how they work with conservation experts on the ground. So check those interviews out next week. Angie, one of the reasons I think I was really excited about Catfish, and I want to make a big deal out of this. I actually have it highlighted. Make a big deal out of this, Chris. Do you realize there are over 3,000 species of catfish? I was like, whoa, I had no idea.
It's so funny, Chris. I had no idea. If you would have asked me prior to doing this podcast, I would have been like, oh, there's like 30 or 40. That would have been my answer.
3,000 species of catfish. So when we said, let's pick a catfish, did not realize what we were getting into.
Well, this could be our new podcast, Just Catfish, right?
Yes, yes. So one out of every 20 vertebrate species is a catfish.
Well, Chris, I thought it was amazing, too, that catfish are super diverse in where they live. They pretty much can live in inland or coastal waters in every continent except Antarctica.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, it's just incredible.
Yeah, they're everywhere. They're everywhere. Oh, yeah, this is fun. So that's why 50 slides, because I couldn't stop researching about them. So let's just jump into it. Let's describe the Mekong giant catfish. And then,
yes.
And then we'll, in the episode, we're going to have some general catfish. I have some details on some other species of catfish. But, you know, obviously we're just going to focus on the Mekong for the conservation and all of this other stuff.
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot, too, about what they're doing to save these megafish, including the Mekong giant catfish. So definitely stick with us. But to give you a visual on the Mekong giant catfish, to begin with, they're huge. But I'll let Chris do the size. But as far as their general look goes, the Mekong River catfish is in the shark catfish family. And because of that, they have shark-like appearances, if you will. The head is huge. And the mouth on the Mekong giant catfish is very large and gaping open. And super fascinating, unlike a lot of other species of catfish, the Mekong giant catfish has no teeth, none. So it looks like a big, large, gummy, huge smile in its mouth, big, big mouth. The eyes of the Mekong giant catfish are really fascinating. They're very low set. In fact, they're almost equal to or lower than this giant mouth line on the fish. They're a little bit ventral of the mouth, which just means towards their belly. And so because of this, they almost look like they're upside down or they look sad all the time or cartoonish. But I still could look at their face all day because overall, they're a good-looking fish. They're a good-looking fish.
Yeah, they're so that's giant. Stretching it. That's there you go.
Well,
there
that mouth, okay. Like, oh, in the videos, like when they're holding them and stuff. Yeah, and they don't have teeth, so that's a bonus, yeah. Right, for this giant megafish.
Mm-hmm,
But their color, they're going to be like a gray scale, grayish white in color overall. They don't have any stripes. And their belly, their ventral area is going to be lighter, typically white, creamish in color, which that countershading is typical, actually, in a lot of fish, and especially in sharks. Mm-hmm. But Chris, what I found fascinating about catfish in general, including the Mekong, is that they're scale-free.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have scales like a typical fish. So they're covered with this smooth armor-like plate that looks very sleek in appearance, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when you talk about catfish, they're well known for their whiskers, which I learned this week that the technical name for catfish whiskers are barbills.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I grew the catfish around where I live. That's what they always have. Interestingly enough, the Mekong giant catfish, at least the adult, do not have these barbills. But the juvenile Mekong giant catfish will have them and they shrink as they get older. So by the time they're adults, they don't have these whiskers, which sets them apart, I think, from a lot of other species of catfish as well.
Oh, there's so much. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they are a beautiful fish. I mean, you look at them and it kind of reminds me of like whale shark eyes are off to the side.
Right, like
so
way
massive.
To the side by that big mouth. Kind of cartoon, like kind of cute, mm-hmm. I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, 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 okay. But massive, and I've got a list of some other massive fish. 9 feet, nearly 10 feet long is the largest ever caught, weighed close to 650 pounds, which is almost 300 kilograms. So that made it the largest freshwater fish ever recorded.
Yes, Guinness World Book of Record.
Holder. Yeah, and the thing is, there's rumors that they get up over 700 pounds, just hasn't been landed or caught. But they reached 400 pounds in only about 6 years. Like mm-hmm. this massive growth. That's one rabbit hole I couldn't go down because I was running out of time thinking there's no way I could explain this. But I would like to look at like how they grow so quickly, you know, and what's causing that. Now, the other large fish that might knock the Mekong giant catfish out as the largest. There's the giant freshwater stingray, mm-hmm. which is huge. They can get up to 600 kilograms or close to 1,300 pounds, Okay, but just not as long, right, as the Mekong giant catfish. So that may be the, you know, but if you're thinking fish, like the giant catfish. Now, the Chinese paddlefish probably was the largest freshwater fish, but it went extinct. I really didn't like this fact. So the Chinese paddlefish got up to 23 feet long. Mm-hmm. It can weigh up to 500 kilograms and was functionally extinct in 1993. Oh, and wow. Yeah, they finally declared it extinct in 2022.
That's too bad.
So, yeah, that was the king in the water, but that is now extinct. So I think the crown does go to the Mekong giant catfish as far as length with weight, even though the freshwater stingray is pretty big. That might be something we cover soon. They get up to 7 feet long. So they're pretty massive. Now, what was also interesting, Angie, is the giant freshwater stingray is in the Mekong River Basin. Mm-hmm. Then you have the Wells catfish, which is pretty widespread in Europe and parts of Asia. Not quite as big as the Mekong giant catfish. They only get up to 300 kilograms. Then you get some two other large fish, the giant Pangasius dog-eating catfish and the giant barb. Mm-hmm. Then you finally get to fish in the Amazon that are pretty big. Then you get the Nile perch from Africa. And then finally, near you in the United States is the alligator gar, which I've seen. We've seen that. In the Mississippi River, they get pretty big.
And what about the sturgeon?
Now, sturgeon are pretty massive, Angie. They didn't make the world's top 10 freshwater fish because I believe sturgeon, they do go out in the ocean. They can get up to 16 feet long, or at least Atlantic sturgeon, and weigh up to 800 pounds. So pretty big fish. There's a lot of big fish out in the ocean.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And so when I sat down and talked with Zeb Hogan, once again, it was like, I was like conservation crushing because his life story is just incredible, being a fish biologist, but then working with National Geographic and creating a TV series and getting people interested in these monster fish, right? So I just want to give a quick promotion for Zeb Hogan's new book called Chasing Giants in Search of the World's Largest Freshwater Fish. It tells a lot of the behind-the-scenes stories and his personal journey of trying to save these megafish from extinction. It's just fascinating. But he got me really excited about these megafish. And Christian mentioned a lot of them. And so talking with Zeb Hogan and asking him, what is a megafish? Like, what does it take? What are the qualifications? And he described a megafish as it has to be a freshwater fish, longer than 6 feet and more than 200 pounds. And so I was like, ding, 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 ding. Chris, you're a megafish.
Thanks. Longer than 6 feet. Yeah, okay. There.
Longer than 6 feet.
Okay, right. 6 feet five, yeah.
And just past 200, so it's past,
yeah. Add a little more than that.
But yeah, and he gave examples, of course, of catfish, freshwater sturgeon, the gar, carp, trout, and I was thinking the stingray as well, depending. Mm. I don't know if they're that long, but yeah. So this is a whole new area for me to learn about and get excited about, but then also hear the conservation plight because several of these fish are endangered, critically endangered, or like, as you mentioned with the paddlefish, like recently extinct.
Yeah. Yeah. So quickly, and I'll get to some of this freshwater crisis that we're having around the world. The Mekong giant catfish is in the Mekong River. So the Mekong River is massive. It's the third longest in Asia, over 3,000 miles or 5,000 kilometers. Starts in the Tibetan Plateau and then runs through China and Vietnam and ends up in the South China Sea or the Pacific Ocean. Has the second highest diversity of fish in the world after the Amazon.
Yes. And not only is it one of the largest river systems in the world, but it's teeming with wildlife and fish. Mm-hmm. Over 1,000 species of fish, and only the Congo and Amazon have a greater diversity. And then not only that, but the Mekong River is the most productive in the world. This number literally, I had to Google it and do a calculator and really try to figure it out. Different videos kept tossing this number around. About 2 million tons of fish per year are pulled from the Mekong River. 2 million tons. That's 4 billion pounds of fish. That's crazy. I did my math right.
That's crazy.
That's a lot. But it's a very big river. But thinking about the Mekong giant catfish and how it grows so big. And then there's other mega fish in this river system. One is the Julian's golden carp, also known as the seven line barb. And also the Siamese giant carp get really, really big. And so I'm just like, why do they get so big in this area? And researchers don't know. They speculate, well, because it is a big river, there is a lot of room in there. But also during the rainy season, the river expands into a floodplain into a lot of area. And so they think that that brings in extra nutrients to help these, feed the different plants and then thus feed the fish and then up the food chain. So they think there's like a lot of nutrients in there to help these thousand species of fish thrive, but then of course to also encourage some of these really mega fish to just grow bigger and bigger.
Yeah, no, they do. It's massive. I mean, it is incredible. So yeah, I mean, it's playing a big role, but now there's only a few hundred left. It's been decimated.
Well, absolutely, Chris. And paper after paper, an article that I read, they call the Mekong giant catfish a flagship species because it's so important to highlight the need to protect not only the Mekong giant, but also other threatened species in the area and to help limit the habitat loss and the habitat destruction that's going on in the area. And Zeb Hogan, when we were talking, he basically discusses that, like, if the Mekong giant catfish goes extinct, so do many other species in the Mekong, because it's kind of like a canary in the coal mine type situation. And so if a lot of these species of fish in the Mekong go extinct, so do the livelihood and the food for people in the region. And so I'm going to summarize it that basically if you save the Mekong giant catfish, you save one of the largest river systems in the world and you save the people that live there. It's that important as a flagship species. And luckily, there's a lot of international collaboration to help save the species, which we'll talk a lot about throughout the podcast. But even historically, people since the dawn of time that live in that area have loved the Mekong giant catfish. In fact, pictures of it line the walls of the Buddhist temples in Thailand. And many people in the Mekong area believe that it's a sacred fish. And we'll talk about a nutrition, but the Mekong giant catfish actually eats and lives off of plants and algae. And so a lot of the Mekong people believe that the fish is peaceful and should be kept in high regard and also saved. So there are a lot of people fighting for it, but in the same instance, there are fishermen that have their livelihood of catching fish. And so there has been bans through most of the region to ban fishing for the Mekong giant catfish. So that's wonderful. But there's still a lot of conservation threats in that region when you look at damming and pollution and urbanization.
That's what I was going to talk about. Yeah, that was kind of where I was leading me into. And then you did say be thankful. And then, and that's something that I do want to get across, because in my interview with Tom and Bill, I ask them, how do you tell these tragic stories? And you know, why isn't there more about conservation in there? And they had a great answer. You know, they don't want to turn viewers off with all doom and gloom. When you do that, you know, you're not going to get a message out. But they need to present facts and show people what's going on. So it's a very tight balance. And that's what I think Angie and I try to do in this podcast is tell these stories of these heroes like Zeb and out there fighting for these animals while we talk about the paddlefish being extinct and the giant catfish, Mekong giant catfish, you know, possibly going extinct. So, but you did mention things that, you know, our freshwater ecosystems, and we've covered this before. So before we get to a break, there's not a lot that you probably haven't heard before if you're paying attention to some of this. But I know a couple of years ago, we talked about our freshwater ecosystems just weren't on our radar, at least, you know, for the podcast, but in the general consciousness, it's more focused on the oceans and plastics, where our freshwater systems are going through a lot too, you know. And so the five big threats to rivers This was an article published by EcoWatch last year in October of 2022, coming out of the World Economic Forum. Just the top five things that are imperiling a lot of these freshwater fish. Dams, Angie just said, that is one of the largest, the most important threat to river biodiversity is dams. Damming up rivers for electricity or creating water reserves for people. When we do that, it does come at an ecological cost. It does harm these fish populations. They become fragmented. Quality of the water changes. The temperature of the water changes. Changes the watersheds. So especially a lot of migratory fish, it really, really imperils them. So that is number one. Number two is pollution. That's what you were just talking about. So, water pollution is actually getting a little bit worse. And one of the things, I've mentioned this in a podcast, I don't know how many ago, threats from pharmaceuticals that are passing through our water treatment facilities. So one of the studies, our scientists at the University of Florida, when I was there at one of our seminars, she was talking about contraceptive pill, which has done a lot for women around the world. The problem is a lot of that, those estrogens or progesterones are passed in the urine, pass through the filtration process, and they end up in rivers and lakes and has an impact on fish and all the animals that live in there. So it's not just that. I remember her, that was her particular study, but there are some of these forever chemicals that end up there. And then also things like all of the pills that humans are taking, a lot of that goes passed on into the river system. So that's something maybe we'll talk about in a future podcast, looking at that. But like antidepressants, things like that. Doesn't mean don't take them. I'm not arguing that. I'm just thinking we need to find a way to be able to treat those in our sewer systems before they end up in our rivers and stuff.
Right. And definitely, if you have leftover ones, make sure you're getting rid of them at your local pharmacy.
Great point.
Or you're not putting them down into the watershed.
Absolutely. Do not flush them down the toilet. Please, please do not do that. And the other one is farm and livestock operations. It's something we deal with here in New Zealand. A lot of my friends that I work with dealing with farm runoff, the laws are changing here in New Zealand to prevent some of that. But in your background, Angie, you see it with the algae blooms, all of that discharge, that nutrients getting washed into the river systems with a lot of rain. You're getting, I guess they called it the guacamole coast now on some parts of Florida where it's just these big algae blooms because of all the nitrogen and things in there. So that has a negative impact on freshwater. Grazing, again, like I said, livestock grazing, a lot of that urine, feces, things can get washed into river systems. That's number three. Climate change was number four. Drought. They're already seeing rivers drying up around the world. Loss of snowpack in the next 30 to 60 years is supposed to get a lot worse. So that means less freshwater going in there. And the number five threat was just not enough protection. So we just need to find the political will to make laws, enforce these laws. Like here, I said, here in New Zealand, there are laws happening and farmers are adjusting how they operate. And I think some of these laws need to be carried around the world to protect these river systems and streams, ponds, lakes, all of them.
Well, absolutely, Chris, because of course we're talking about the Mekong giant catfish today, but lots of species of fish in general in that area are declining, which is really hindering the livelihood of the fishermen and the people in that area. So there needs to be a lot of protections. So we've got to work together and figure out how to keep these waterways clean and safe.
Yep. All right, I want to take a quick break, but real quick, Angie, do you remember that story about that fish that likes to swim up the urine stream and get stuck in people's private parts? Remember that story? I think we talked about it in the Amazon a while back. I don't remember. Did you ever hear something like that?
Yeah, definitely there's like folklore, but I forget which species of fish it is.
Okay, it's a parasitic catfish. When we get back from the break.
Oh, fun times. Okay.
When we get back from the break, we'll We'll tell that story after
we'll
the
come back with
quick
some
evolution.
Fun catfish facts. Yeah.
All right. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back. I know I had a lot of slides. So to make sure this isn't a 2-hour podcast, even though this fish probably deserves that.
More than that. It's a giant, right? It's a mega fish, mega pod.
Yeah. So evolution, I mean, the class of the ray-finned fishes, Actinopterygii, 50% of all vertebrates from tuna, which was an amazing episode, to seahorses, another amazing. Now we have our catfish.
Do you have the numbers of those?
Episode 302 was anglerfish, 289 salmon, okay. Horses swim wild in the sea, seahorses, episode 256. Tuna, episode 238. And
that was a big one.
Mm-hmm. And then we had a number of sharks. We did electric eel, 142. So look for those. There was quite a bit of in there, and we still have more to come. So, yeah, they're huge, huge class of animals. Now, the catfish is siluriforms, and there's only about 36 families of the 3,000 species. So huge. One out of every 20 vertebrates on Earth is a catfish. Insane. So we're going to be.
I love everything
this.
About that, honestly.
I know.
I do.
One out of 20. I would never have guessed that.
No. Fun facts. That's why we do this podcast. Like, our minds are always blown each week.
Now, the family really narrows it down to the shark catfish, the Pangasididae. And that's because a lot of these catfish have that triangular dorsal fin, other characteristics of a shark. They're not sharks. They're just shark catfish. They look like sharks to an extent. And it's about 30 species. And then Pangasiodon is the genus. Yeah, see, it's not easy, is it?
Pangasiodon gigas. I got the gigas.
Okay, there you
giggity,
go.
Giggity,
okay.
Giggity, 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 gigas.
All right. So that's the that is the species name. And then you have the Pangasiodon hypothalamus. That's easy. Mm-hmm. Hypothalamus. Really? Hypothalamus?
I thought that too, Chris. It's so it's not
it's
exactly.
Hypothalamus.
It definitely ends in thalamus, though.
That's weird. Yeah, iridescent shark. Wow. Okay, cool. All right. That's the other genus in there. So another, they live in the Mekong River too. So another big catfish, not quite as big as their co-species there in the genus. Now, fish evolution, fish have been around forever. 530 million years ago, this was the Cambrian explosion when just we saw species explode around the planet for 25 million years. Bony fishes evolved around 420 million years ago. I mean, again, I love this fact. Every time we have sharks, we had sharks in our oceans before there were trees. Trees didn't come till about 385 million years ago. I love that.
It's crazy.
Fact. So the earliest catfish that we know of evolved about 70 million years ago. Honestly, not a lot. I really dug for a while looking at trying to find catfish evolution because I'm so curious about this animal or these animals. So what I did find reading I was reading genetic studies, things like that. Most catfish evolved from a single species ancestor. And we do know the Mekong giant catfish and relatives emerged about 1.5 million years ago. So they are definitely ancient. They're old species, not millions, 20, 30, 40 million years. But they've been around. They're probably one of the older living species on Earth compared to a lot of things that have evolved and changed over the last, 300,000, 400,000, 500,000 years. So older fish. And it was interesting. Again, I couldn't find a ton on it. But at some point, they thought catfish had scales. But that's when they gave way to the dermal plates covering their skin. So there are some armored catfish. Things like that, which are interesting. Now, to get to this parasitic catfish, I went down this rabbit hole. This is why I have 50 slides.
Pardon the pun.
So it's the candiroo, or also known as the canaro, toothpick fish, or vampire fish. And it's a parasitic freshwater catfish in the Amazon basin. So Brazil, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, Bolivia, all the places you've got to visit. And it was thought that it could enter the urethra. And specifically
males and females?
And females, but mainly okay. males. And
oh, good.
So right. this started rumors in the 1800s, explorers down there, scientists said the indigenous people would protect the male appendage when bathing to prevent fish from swimming up it. So most people of the day said that's not true. There's no way a fish could swim up the urethra. But in 1997, a 23-year-old man claimed, and a doctor, and this is a doctor was saying that did the surgery, Dr. Anwar Samad removed the fish. But a 23-year-old claimed a kangaroo jumped from the water into his urethra as he was urinating while thigh deep in a river. So according to the doctor, the patient claimed the fish had darted out of the water up the urine stream into the urethra.
I mean, he must not have a very strong stream. I'm just going to say that because... I'm not a physicist, but I just feel like,
okay,
I'm trying to visual. I don't know.
Fluid, go ahead. Fluid dynamics says this is absolutely false. It's near impossible.
Thank you. That's the technical term. Okay.
People said one of the people debunking this, and there's other preposterous claims. You can look it up in female anatomy, rear ends, all sorts of things this fish likes to burrow in. It's all been proven false or not true. One of the people that debunked it said, even if a person were to urinate while submerged in a stream where the kangaroo lived, the odds of that person being attacked by a kangaroo are about the same as being struck by lightning while simultaneously being eaten by a shark.
So not possible.
Not going to happen. But I remember hearing that story. I think you and I talked about it. I was like, oh my God, I never want to go swim in the Amazon. I don't want a fish swimming up my woohoo. Anyways.
No, you need to go. Well, maybe don't swim in the Amazon, but you have to go see it. I've been lucky enough to take a small boat cruise. And see the meeting of the waters on the Amazon. Mm-hmm. Two of the rivers merge, and it's phenomenal. So
I want to go on.
It's worth the risk of this
kangaroo.
This myth, yeah. Anyways, it's a myth. But Chris, I'll add to your fun catfish facts with an interesting claim that some catfish are venomous and in rare cases have killed people. Did you come across that at all?
I couldn't find anything on the Mekong giant catfish, but I did read that numerous catfish species, especially the eel tail, that are near the Indian Ocean, Western Pacific, New Guinea, go figure, can be lethal to humans. But I did not know that a lot of catfish in their fin rays, that they can deliver a stinging protein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a little bit of a venomous punch there. Many species of catfish have what they call stings embedded behind their fins. And mm-hmm. so therefore, when you are handling them, you need to take precaution or wear gloves or something like that. But the most of the time, these stings are non-venomous at all. They're mm-hmm. just pokey and they would hurt to get poked. But for a few species, these stings actually can have venom in them. And for example, I came across the striped eel catfish mm-hmm. as yep. one of them that you wouldn't want to mess with at all. But mm-hmm. in general, most catfish are not going to hurt you, obviously. But with 3,000 of them, they've evolved unique ways to protect themselves.
They are the vertebrate order with the largest number of venomous species. Not snakes. Wow. It's catfish. So there you go. There's another fun trivia fact for all us animal nerds.
I am loving catfish. So many
interesting
facts. Yeah.
I stopped at 50. I was like, done. No more. Because I started going down these rabbit holes. I'm like, oh my gosh. I didn't know that. I didn't know this. I didn't know they could live to be 60.
Right. You know?
Yeah,
yes.
60 years old.
Well, and there's small little ones that can't go in your urethra, as you debunked here. And then there's the largest species of freshwater fish with the Mekong giant. Yep. So very, very diverse group of fish. Yeah.
No, they're Love amazing. It. Like, okay, so then you talked about the spines, the venom, the skin, not scales. So scales are like protection against parasites and things. So what the catfish do is the skin has mucus covered. So anybody that's caught catfish, you know they're slimy. Every time I've caught them, you know, and avoiding that spine and, you know, grabbing them by the mouth to hold them up and take the hook out. So
most have teeth.
Some have teeth. Yeah, yeah. Some the ones I was teeth. Catching. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the ones I was catching up in Oregon and Northern California and Southern California. But this, the mucus that covers their skin helps with locomotion, and it's a defense barrier against bacteria and fungi. So the fish skin mucus has many anti-pathogenic substances, so immunoglobulins, like immunology stuff, stuff to kill bad things, lectin and hemolysin and things that keep bacteria and stuff off their skin so it keeps them healthy. Like, that's a whole other rabbit hole you can go down. Like, how do they secrete it? Where's it from? What's the physiology like? But again, to save you all that detail in this podcast, because I imagine what we might cover another catfish someday. Yeah, I mean, that's another fact.
Chris, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the catfish whiskers, right? That's why they're named, nicknamed catfish.
Yeah, the barbells.
Yeah, and so most catfish... Now, of course, the Mekong giant adult catfish doesn't have it, but most catfish have these whiskers, which are called barbels, which are slender, and they almost look like whiskers that come out from a cat's cheeks. And what these whiskers or these barbels are, they're sensory organs that are near the mouth. And catfish have them, but some carp have them, goatfish, hagfish, sturgeon, zebrafish, black dragonfish. Even some species of shark have them, but they're really important because these barbels house the taste buds of fish, and they help them search for food because a lot of the catfish are bottom dwellers, and they're a sensory organ that helps them taste and look for the food in these really dark, murky, or silty waters where they live. And from an anatomy point of view, with the barbels on catfish, they can either be fleshy protrusions, really long tube. They can be short. There can be a couple of them. But the barbel or the whisker in general is supplied with blood and lots of nerves to wrap around. And the barbels are supported by cartilaginous connective tissue. But then there's a ton of blood vessels that go to that area, and then also myelinated nerves that basically wrap around to help provide this sensory organ all the useful information as far as, I guess, what the water tastes like. For me, I had not equated and didn't realize that the whiskers were equal to like taste buds. I always thought that they were maybe more just like feelers, like to feel so they don't bump into rocks or or something like that to help them feel their way. But I think it's more accurate to say that the whiskers on a catfish or the barbells on a catfish are more to help them taste their way through the murky waters, which is super awesome. In fact, one study I found, the bullheaded catfish has 25 taste buds or sensory nerves, if you will, in a square millimeter of the barbell or the whisker on its skin. A lot of them are obviously they're, you know, many centimeters in length. And so very, very innervated, important sensory organ for the catfish.
When I read that and reading about it, it made me think of snakes in the forked tongue, right? They taste the air, they taste the ground. And I mean, that's a little bit, you know, that's the snake's tongue.
Sure.
So here you have whiskers doing that in the water. That's fascinating.
Yeah. And that's just, that's why I love nature and animals and how different species do things differently. Because I guess, silly me, I always just associated taste with the tongue. But that.
No.
I mean, could you imagine? No. Could you imagine, like, I mean, as I'm petting the birthday cake with my hand, I'm like, ooh, this is really sugary, or I can taste strawberries. Yeah. You know, just like a totally different tissue or organ or part region of your body doing the tasting. It's just fascinating.
It is. And now that leads us into eating. You said these ones don't have teeth, but you did mention it before. Herbivores?
Giant, humongous herbivores, which is just, I mean, the physiology of that is incredible, because these 200, 300, 400, 500, 600 pound fish are basically just eating algae, which is incredible.
Yeah.
And so when the Mekong giant catfish is little, a tiny fish, either called a larvae, that then becomes a fry, or a kitten. I thought that was hilarious. I mean, it makes sense. Catfish babies.
Yeah.
They will eat zooplankton, and they actually are very cannibalistic at a young age. But around a year, the Mekong giant catfish becomes an herbivore and basically just eats plants and algae. And researchers think that they probably just spend their whole day trying to get the algae that grows on rocks and on different surfaces on the floor and the sides of rivers. So they don't have teeth, so they don't really need to. They're obviously not like cutting large blades of grass or anything like that off. So there's still a ton that researchers don't know just about their general ecology and behavior, which to me is kind of a bummer, because they're just such a cool, unique, giant catfish. But they can speculate that since they don't have teeth, that they're most likely just eating algae. There have been some notes in one scientific article that they did find phytoplankton and zooplankton in their stomach. So maybe getting a little protein from zooplankton when they're an adult. But in general, it's mostly just the babies or the fry that feed on the zooplankton.
I didn't go down this rabbit hole, and I've so wanted to, but I just figured it'd be, again, too long. How do they metabolize the algae and maybe a little bit of plankton and these plants and grow so quickly?
Yeah.
That is a fascinating study, and something, you know, maybe we can look at a future episode of an animal that grows that fast, puts on that much weight. I know whales do. They put on an incredible amount of weight, but they're drinking, you know, the baby whales are drinking milk, fat, very dense, caloric dense meals. I just don't see calories in plants. calories in algae.
In natural habitats, it was reported that the Mekong giant catfish can grow from 150 to 200 kilograms in 3 to 5 years, or that's basically about 20 to 30 kilograms per year. Under human care, Mekong giant catfish, the fry, started averaging about 13 centimeters long and 17 grams, okay, when they're babies, and grew an average of 40 centimeters to 620 grams in only 4 months. And so researchers calculated out that was a 400% increase in weight in 4 months. So, I mean, I do know that a lot of algae, I don't know if this species of algae in the Mekong River on the different rocks, but algae is high in omega-3 fatty acids.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. All right. So behavior, well-traveled. I read that.
Yes. So the Mekong giant catfish is a migratory species of catfish. And historically, they had a huge migration. And while researchers don't exactly know the path and in the kind of the small subtleties of the Mekong giant catfish's migration, what they do know, or what they think, is that the Mekong giant catfish will spend a lot of its time feeding in Cambodia, which is further south. And then it will migrate hundreds of miles north to its spawning grounds in northern Thailand. And what triggers them to travel upstream to spawn is the beginning of the rainy season. And only the adults will spawn. And so they're much older fish that are doing this migration and heading up north into Thailand. But unfortunately, a lot of this journey hasn't been mapped, and there's still a lot of missing parts in it. But overall, the Mekong giant catfish and their migration hasn't been like very well mapped at all. And there's still many missing holes and parts in it. And historically, researchers wonder if they even traveled further north, but because of all the damming and things that have just gone, that had happened upriver in northern Thailand, up in China, that that may not be possible. So yeah, it's, there's just, I mean, once until like Zeb Hogan jumped into the river with them with National Geographic and their film crews, they're just, yeah, they're just, this is, granted, this was like 15 years ago or 12 years ago or something, but there just wasn't a lot known about them, and we're still missing these pieces. But researchers are hopeful that they are still migrating, and that they can locate the spawning grounds. They can work on really protecting certain regions of the Mekong to help the species stay alive.
One of the interesting things I think about catfish, you know, bottom dwellers or where they are in the river systems tend to be solitary, right? I mean, they're not schooling. And maybe the little ones? Right. Yeah, no, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely solitary. Of course, so during spawning is when you would maybe find a higher cluster of them. But unfortunately, because Mekong giant catfish is so critically endangered, there's just not large numbers of them anywhere, even during spawning.
So, and I know this might be ahead of repro, but so how would they, again, I find it fascinating. I didn't have time to go down this rabbit hole, but how would like a male and female find each other in this large ecosystem, murky, all of that stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I wonder the same thing too, Chris. I would imagine pheromones are involved, and whether or not the whiskers or the barbels are involved as far as to be able to taste different pheromones or things like that. But what I was fascinated to learn is catfish in general typically produce lots of different sounds, and they have pretty well-developed auditory reception to understand different sounds, pitches, velocities. They can understand where a sound originates from. They can determine the distance from the sound and where it originated from. And in some of the ways that catfish communicate with each other is either through drumming sounds or stridulation sounds. So they're making some noise. So that might help male and females meet. But there's probably visual signals as well. So there's definitely auditory, but I would speculate too that there's pheromonal, some kind of chemical communication going on to help them during breeding season. And also to help them migrate. Like with any migratory species we've covered, whether it's a bird or a land animal, how do they know which way to go? And some of it's instinctual, but are they going off of chemical signals it's one of these podcasts where I feel like I'm left with more questions than answers, which is another vote of why we need to make sure and keep the Mekong giant around so we can learn how male and female Mekong giant catfish meet up, so researchers know where to protect them and how to better protect them and to help save them and other fish in the river systems.
It's interesting you say that, Angie. I you know, trying to think of how these animals, aquatic animals, meet and mate. That was something now Dr. Jonathan Cowart, when I talked to him way back when about manatees, and I was sitting on his research project back in Florida, and that was one thing he wanted to find out. And we figured it's too much money, too hard to figure out, but how do manatees find each other to mate? So hormones in the water system, who knows? I just find it just fascinates me how they do it, especially big fish like this.
I mean, these animals are superheroes. I can't even find John in my own house. I'd be like, I hear you, but like, where are you? Or he's usually always in the bathroom, spoiler alert, his phone. exactly. Like how in this murky water system, there's not a lot of these giant catfish left. How are they able to know where to go to spawn? And how, it's so incredible. All of it's just so incredible. And honestly, Chris, to me, one of the really sad things is for the Mekong giant catfish, we don't know a ton about their reproduction. What we do know, generally speaking, with Mekong giant catfish is they won't breed until they're at least around 6 years of age. And so they have to be large. They need to be anywhere from 50 to 70 kilograms or 110 to 150 pounds. And so some of the research was saying 6 years, but other researchers saying it's more like 10 or 15 years, depending on how they grow, right? to be that big in order to reproduce. And when it is time for them to reproduce, they do head north upstream to spawn in Thailand, in northern Thailand, typically from late April to mid-May. And once again, just to reiterate, the spawning grounds of the Mekong giant catfish are really poorly known and poorly understood, which is going to be a really important development in order to help save the waters that they're spawning in and take better care of them. Mm-hmm. But what we do know from rearing them under human care is that a Mekong giant catfish, their egg is called an adhesive egg type. It's yellow in color with a diameter of 1.7 millimeters. And we don't know much, like I said, about the Mekong giant catfish. Fun fact, though, about catfish in general, Chris, you'll appreciate this, is catfish dads are good dads and they work hard for their developing larva. And so in other species of catfish, and so once male and female catfish mate, which if for fish, what then external fertilizations means both male and female release their gametes, their sperm and their eggs at the same time. It typically takes about a week for the eggs to mature. But during this week, the dads will guard the eggs and they make sure that they're safe. So
they don't nibble on a few. I'm trying to remember what species that was. I forgot. It was a few back, but
some do, but no, I think in general, catfish dads are very good and they don't sample their offspring at all. But I don't know if this behavior is seen in the Mekong giant catfish. I'm not sure if that behavior is seen because researchers, once again, just have not studied them that much in the wild because, well, there's not very many of them left and they live in this huge, huge river system. There was one study that I found where a Mekong giant catfish female, she laid about 500,000 to 2 million eggs. So
it's crazy. Well,
yeah,
you would hope they would all of a sudden populate, but they don't. They don't.
Not even close, unfortunately. When the larvae are born, the larvae of catfish are born, they're known as kittens or fries. And that's when they do actually participate in some cannibalism to help get themselves going. But then, of course, predators and just all of the things that will gobble up, a new little fish fry. So it's tough out there. And yeah. I couldn't find any statistic of those 500,000 to 2 million eggs that are laid by a female. Does one make it? Do two? And one year, that's the thing. They don't need to just make it to 1 year or 2 year or 3 year. They need to make it to year 6 to 15 before they can reproduce themselves. So that's an uphill battle.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, we open up. These are critically endangered. A few hundred left. We don't know. They're only basing it on how many have been caught. So the numbers have gone way, way down. So there may be a few hundred, there may be 10. We don't know. We just don't know. But obviously overfishing, the damming of the Mekong tributaries, these spawning grounds being destroyed, all has taken a huge toll on them. But like Angie said, to give you some hope, there is a focus on it. It's now illegal in Thailand, Laos, Cambodia to harvest any Mekong giant catfish. They're still caught and sold in Vietnam, so Vietnam needs some pressure there. And they have started to breed them artificially with mixed success, which is interesting. You would think, we can make a bunch.
They're tough under human care. Yeah. I mean, they have been able to do some restocking. Mm-hmm. And so, Chris, in Thailand, the fisheries department has instituted a breeding program to help restock Mekong giant catfish. But there's a couple constraints of this. It's not as easy as it is in other species, like salmon or something that we might do here in the U.S. Number one, they take so long to mature. They grow fast and they get big, but in the same instance, they don't actually mature for a long time. So right now, at present, in order to make this program work, they actually have to harvest a wild spawning catfish and then bring them into captivity, induce them to spawn through some hormonal manipulation, and and then rear the young from there. So because they're catching these wild spawners, you're taking some out of the river to do that. Now, the thought is you're putting a whole bunch more back in, right? But it's been a tough go at it. The numbers have not rebounded, I guess, the way that they thought they would. And they've been doing this from since the early 2000s. Yeah. It's definitely a piece of the puzzle to rear them in captivity and then release them. But it's not going to be the silver bullet. They definitely need to stop any illegal poaching. And they also need to obviously protect their waterways, learn more about their natural history, as far as where their spawning areas are and how do we make sure we're not damming up those or dredging that area. Dredging's common in some of these regions as well. And of course, urbanization and pollution. So it's hopeful that there's a lot of initiatives internationally. Many countries working together, like you said, Thailand, Laos, and Cambodia, to stop fishing them. But in the same instance, we've got to keep our eyes on them because, I don't want to see another megafish go extinct in our lifetime, right?
Yeah, no, we don't. We don't. How you can help, what you can do for your freshwater fish, wherever you live, or if you're listening to this and you live on the Mekong River, or near there, things that you can do. Conserve water. It's something, it's funny. I was thinking about this the other day, and I just, when I shave or I brush my teeth, I turn the faucet off. I used to just let it run. I developed the habit years ago when we started talking about it with the podcast. It's just something that it clicked with me. I'm like, wow, it's a habit. It's a habit to turn it off, not let it run. When I wash dishes, if I'm hand washing them, I'll put, because I didn't have a dishwasher. The dishwasher wasn't working or whatever. Soak them and then rinse and turn off. I didn't just leave it running like I did way back in the day. So simple things you can do. Shorten your showers a little bit. I know it's nice with hot water and things on you, but if you're like, I'm going to take a little bit shorter shower today. If we all do it, the tens of thousands listening to this or the millions of people, we get that message out. We save a lot of our fresh water. Other things.
I'm doing my part for that. I'm definitely doing my part.
Yeah.
For
skipping showers. It's like,
definitely.
Yeah. But, low flow shower heads, you can do
low fixed flow toilets.
Low flow toilets that only run your dishwasher or washing machines when they're full. This is all from National Geographic. They had a good 10 tips. Eat a bit less meat. I was just thinking about this drive-in today. The 16-ounce steak or 12-ounce steak, I get tiny cuts now when I eat meat. Or skip, have a vegetarian day, meatless Mondays. Buy less stuff. I know Angie and I have talked about that, this fast fashion. It takes a lot of water to make clothes or make things, recycle, obviously. And just know where your water comes from. If my water comes from this river or that lake, you'll start caring about it more and you'll start paying attention to it more. And, if we get a little bit political and say, hey, to our politicians, protect this water source. This is where my water comes from. This is what my children are drinking. This is what my animals are drinking. So anyways, just tips that you can do. Angie, the organization of the week, I know you just kind of wanted to talk more about Dr. Hogan, right?
Yes, Chris, I really enjoyed my interview with Zeb Hogan. Just incredible researcher and hearing all the stories about the TV series Monster Fish on National Geographic was incredible. But learning about his work to conserve these mega species, just such a hero. And then putting all those stories and that huge conservation message together in his new book called Chasing Giants in Search of the World's Largest Freshwater Fish. It's incredible. It's an interesting read. I told him I'm getting it for all the fishermen in my family because they'll definitely love it. But then also conservationists will love it. Something that I always like to mention to people is a lot of times your fishermen and your hunters are some of the best conservationists out there. And of course, with Zeb Hogan and all of his work and then the TV shows, they do catch and release, of course. And because of him, the Mekong giant catfish and some of these other mega catfish, or the stingray, as Chris mentioned, he put them on the map. He made people be interested. My kids love the show, talking about it. So they super geeked out when I told them that I was interviewing the host. Mm-hmm. And that's a first important step, right? Make these mega fish, this region, the Mekong River in Southeast China, like common knowledge, the way that the Amazon is, or the Mississippi River. It needs to be known what an important, diverse, beautiful, and incredible part of the world this is. And it's worth saving these mega fish. And then, of course, all the diversity that comes when you save a flagship species. So check out his book. And then as far as conservation efforts go, because of his work, I have to give a huge shout out to National Geographic and also the World Wildlife Fund. They work together through a program called Living Mekong Program that works in that region to help reduce habitat loss and habitat destruction to help save the species of fish that inhabit that river. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then, of course, check out the interview that's going to be dropping in a couple days. Right, Chris?
Yep. We're going to do it big beasts and big fish. And I think we're going to have to pick a big species after that week of big interviews. We'll come back at you with something big and then maybe we'll go look at something tiny. We'll see. But no, it is a fun species. I mean, there's so much to learn. We're going to have to cover another catfish. I mean, 1 in 20 vertebrates are catfish. There you go. Did not know that. But well, so many amazing facts.
Yeah, Chris, what a cool creature to talk about this week and get excited about. And I hope, you know, I hope you'll share this podcast with your friends and family and yeah, get talking about catfish. Cause a lot of us, most people have interacted with them at some point in time. And, there's a lot of fun facts that, you need to share with your friends and family and check out some of those Nat Geo, YouTube video clips too about the Mekong giant catfish. So you can really get a visual on this beautiful and critically endangered creature that needs our help.
Amazing, Angie. Yeah, take care, everybody, and look for those interviews. And we'll be back with another species here very soon.
Thank you. Stay curious.